What's up, Food Podcast with Felipe Esparza and Rodrigo Torres.
Yeah, man. What's cracking, though?
We're in the hoodie of death over here, sweating, walking around like a human sauna.
Shining.
What's up, Food? It's kind of hot in here.
It's cool. Is it hot?
I don't know, man.
It was cold outside and it's warmer in here, though.
Yeah, man. So we just got back. We were in
Denver, dog.
Denver. We did a one-nighter.
Hell yeah. Mile High City, dog.
Mile High. It was a crazy show, you know? It was for Latino Association of EF.
Was it the Latino Educational? Latino American Educational Foundation, dog.
Yeah, man. So the show was supposed to be at 8. We got showed up a day early, and the show was supposed to be at 8:30 at night. The show didn't start till 9:45. It was in and out, huh? Or did you go do a quick 5? I did 35 and got off the stage, took off our suits. No. Let me tell you, man, when you walk around a city wearing suits, and you could be, if you wear a suit and fix your hair, you could push pretty much, walk around any city in the world and do drugs. Nobody's staring at you like, what they doing over there?
Because
if we were dressed like our normal clothes,
yeah,
we'd have blend in like the homeless people over there. Say, man, what are you guys doing in that corner?
Locally.
But if you were in a suit, you could just say, man, we're just right here, Jehovah's Witnesses, trying to pass out the message.
The word.
We're from Richard Outreach. We're with Job for the Future. Oh, old school.
No. Posted, man.
So it was a quick show, man. And
it was cool.
We were walking around downtown Denver, enjoying the free bus.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
They have a free bus.
Up and down the fucking street.
And guess what? It was an RTD.
Hell yeah, dude. Hop in there, grab on, and dude, move. Huh?
Before we even get even started, man, well, thank you everybody who subscribed to the podcast last week. You moved us up to number 51.
Hell yeah.
That's all it takes, man. We need more people to subscribe to our podcast. Tell your friends or do what me and Rodrigo do. When we meet somebody and they want to take a photo with us, we tell them, hey, bro, subscribe to my podcast right now. I don't know what that is. You have iTunes? I'll show you.
Hell yeah, Droid or a fucking...
And then make them subscribe right there.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to tell your friends to get into the podcast, whether you're on Stitcher, SoundCloud, or whatever you find the What's Up Food podcast, tell them, man, subscribe. Write a good note. You know, we read every message. Like, we read the message last week. I'm my first time listening. I'm a little late. Let me tell you, man, you're never too late. All you got to do now is catch up.
Hell yeah.
But it might take up all your week, though. I know people that say, Felipe, I went through your whole podcast, and that's 85 episodes. That's almost 85 hours.
Fuck more, dog.
Podcast and chill?
So, hell yeah, dog.
Also, these are my dates right now. My dates are this weekend. I'll be at the Tampa Improv, March 17th through the 20th, with Adam Murray.
Hey, guys.
I'm sorry I'm so late. And Keith Manning.
What's going on?
Get off the field.
Get off the field.
Yeah. Keith Manning will be there. Also, April 1st, I'm going to be in New York. The Hot 97 Comedy Jam with Tracy Morgan, Ricky Smiley, D-Ray Davis, Eric Spears, Dominique. Oh, yeah, and there's a Mexican in the show, Felipe Esparza. He's going up first. I hear people say, wow, you're the first Mexican to win Last Comic Standing. I have a better answer for that.
What's that, dog?
I'm the first motherfucker from Los Angeles to win Last Comic Standing. How about that? Took it back home.
Hell yeah.
I don't want to be the first of anything no more, man. It's a lot of pressure, huh?
A grip of pressure, dog, I would believe, huh?
Like, I was watching the 30 for 30
uh-huh.
on the Patrick Ewing, Georgetown. And let me tell you, man, I don't know much about basketball, but back in the days when Georgetown was in it, I knew Patrick Ewing was. He was a bad motherfucker, right? And when they won the state the nationals, I guess the whole thing, he said, "How do you feel to be the first black coach to win a city national?" He said, first of all, how about the first coach to win a championship in 30 years?
Damn,
it don't matter who's black, Chinese, or anything. He's just the first coach to win a championship for that Georgetown in 30 years.
Damn, dude.
You know when Patrick Ewing first came out?
Uh-huh.
There were racists against him, bro. Like, racists. The kind of racists you see now at Donald Trump rallies. No, for real. There was, so there
what
was
are they a, saying to that fool?
The Philadelphia Eagle. I don't know if it's at the Eagle Press. Uh-huh. They called Patrick Ewing a big ape.
Damn.
Like that, fool. And then they had signs, you know, oh, Patrick Ewing can't read, spelled R-E-D. And then the head coach came out and said, listen, man, if you guys don't make that guy take down that banner, we ain't going to play. And that's the first time where college games were getting attendance. The Big East has just started. It was prime time, bro. People were, no, it don't matter who was watching basketball. The Big East is playing.
It's mad hype. Mad hype. Fucking
Syracuse versus Georgetown sold out, you know. North Carolina, whatever.
Stadium sold just fucking out. Packed to the gills.
Anyways, man, we're talking about basketball. I'm going to give a couple of dates. We have a professional right here that knows more about basketball than us.
Hell yeah.
All right, people. April 7th through the 10th, Tempe, Arizona. We already bought the tickets. Rodrigo Torres and Keith Manning will be there. Do you know you'll be in the show?
Yeah, just today.
All right.
Hell yeah, dog.
It's going to be fun. April 16th, El Paso, Texas, at the Chavez Theater, Abram Chavez Theater, one night only. Marcela Arguello, Keith Manning, and Rodrigo Torres, and me. Ha ha.
Yeah,
April 21st to the 23rd, Reno, Nevada, Tahoe Comedy Club with Rodrigo Torres and I. April 28th through May 1st, Houston, Texas. Houston Improv with Keith Manning and Rodrigo Torres. Unless Rodrigo picks up a hot show at the Ontario Improv or something. Or gets booked at the Flaco support group show. Keep Flaco alive. So what's up, fool? I know last week we had Rodrigo Torres here as a special guest. And his co-host was Felipe Esparza. We didn't have no guest. You know, sometimes we don't have a guest. And most of the time we don't have a guest because we didn't ask nobody or they flaked. But I'm very happy that people like our show and it's just us.
Hell yeah, dog. This fucking shit's tight, dog. And fucking charting like a motherfucker. We already
charting, bro.
Right? iTunes banner, dog.
iTunes. We're on the iTunes banner?
Yeah, like right there, fucking iTunes banner. Right there, you pop it up, dude.
Oh, badass, then. So, a lot of people are listening to the Scruncho one.
Yeah.
You know comedian Scruncho? Yeah, he was on our podcast last week. And Corey Holcomb, bro, is up to 10,000 views. Anyways, man, we were talking about growing up in the projects last week. And I was telling you guys about the warehouses and the factories, the pickle factory, how everybody in the projects would go over there. And that was our entertainment.
A little hustle.
Because we couldn't go past Clarence because no matter where we went, it was enemy territory. What's up, fool? We have a guest here all the way from Aliso Village.
Yeah.
This kid, he showed up to my show at the, what you call it, at the Nokia Live. And he was right in the front looking like a superstar with his white girlfriend. looking like OJ.
OJ.
And I, you know, and then he was dying, man, laughing all the jokes. And I was like, who is this guy? Then he came up to me, patiently waited, took a picture with him. And he's the author from the neighborhood.
Yes.
He wrote a movie. This should be a movie.
I know, shit.
It should be an epic. It should be a biopic. Ah, a saga. You can't even tell this guy's story in one movie, man. It has to be a 7-part series on FX because it's going to be too hardcore. His name is Paul Blunt. And he grew up in a little bit. I'm sorry. Paul Blunt. That's a comedian now.
Joe Blunt, no?
Joe Blunt. We're going to cut this off. But okay, so you guys thought we messed it up. Paul Blunt. Paul Blunt. Paul Hunt. You know, Felipe messes up every name here. And I'm sorry. I'm looking right at it. And I'm still adding an L to his name and a B. I guess because I haven't done anything all day. I've been sober all day.
I know.
I slept a lot today, too.
Catching up with that time.
This guy's the author of the a very good book. And it's a short book, but with a lot of information about the neighborhood. Paul Hunt.
Yes.
All the way from New Orleans.
Yes.
He was here before Katrina.
Ah.
So what's up, fool?
What's up, man?
I read your book. You read the book?
I read the first two chapters.
Okay.
For those of you people who are saying, oh, I don't like reading books, right, man, right. It's an easy read,
right,
man.
Right,
it's one
right.
of those books that once you start reading it, you don't want to get to the end.
Right.
It ends, you want to see what the hell happened, man. So right here, he's going to answer our question about what happened and how he got to write this book.
Right.
Because I always wanted to write a book, man. But I write paragraphs, mm-hmm. and then I give up. I'm not a good writer. I'm a good speaker because I don't shut up. So what's up, Paul
what's
Hunt?
What's up, man? Hey, yeah, but I didn't grow up by the pickle factory. I grew up next to the El Pato.
Oh, El Pato sauce.
El Pato hot sauce.
He grew up over there on Anderson and I don't know the last street in the back, Mission, right?
Paseo Rio.
Oh, wow.
Way in the back, right. Right by the El Pato and right by the fire freeway. So it's Fuel and El Pato.
So you smelled El Pato sauce
every day.
It's funny when they were trying to close that sriracha company over there in West Covina because the neighbor was complaining about the spices. But motherfucker, we grew up with spices. And sometimes the stench was stronger than
very
other
strong.
Days.
Very, very, very strong. And then I'll walk over there and try to get a case of it. And they be like, get away from me. I had a rash on my nose and everything. Like, look, man, you blowing my nose off. But they get the paper factory gave me free paper. The pickle factory gave me free pickles. El Pato didn't give up that sauce.
Don't forget the folder factory, bro.
Oh, the folder factory.
See, we had a factory for everything.
Everything.
And if you didn't want to rip them off, you could go there and be nice, and they'll mm-hmm. give you something.
Right.
Be nice.
There used to be right there on Pico Elite, Pico Garden side. Mm-hmm. There used to be a place where they made French bread, and I would go over there and ask the Mexicans, "Hey, man, can I have a un pan por favor?" And they will give me warm bread. That place, I went there and recently, and it's no longer there, man. No more bread. It's a loft. They ain't giving out no bread now.
No bread.
How do you feel, man, about the neighborhood changing?
And what time?
Now.
Now.
It's looking like a ghost town sometimes. Like, you don't recognize it, huh? What was it like when you grew up?
When I was there, you know, it was like an Indian village, you know. You know, everybody just took care of each other, you know, and everybody was big neighbors and everything was cool. And, you know, we went to Pecan Park together. We swam in the same pool. We went to summer school, ate the same free lunch. And, you know, my friends' moms knew me and it was a good relationship. It was a good community. Like, if I compare Brooklyn or Boyle Heights, to me, it's the same energy, you know, and I'm lucky that I was placed in a place that has so much energy, you know, great energy and great vibe. You know, it was a lot of bad times, but I think overall the great times took us, you know, put more ambition in us and gave us more fuel to do bigger things.
Did you ever And I ask this when I meet my friends who grew up in the projects. Do you ever have dreams that you're still there and you're being chased?
I stopped running like 10 years ago. So now I just stop and just look at the people chasing, just watch them just run past me. You know, so they're like a circle. So I just keep seeing them just run around the circle, you know, different times and stuff like that. So, you know, that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, because there's times when I have dreams, bro, that I'm back in the projects and I'm looking at bad shit again. I have a dream that I'm hooked on crack again and I'm being chased. Then when I wake up, I say, all right, I'm not in a Pico Aliso no more.
Which is a fast dream. And shit. Does it happen a lot or every now and then?
Every once in a while, I think I'm running from somebody. I'm from Clay Hills.
Yeah, Clay Hills was real bad.
Clay Hills was like not even a hills, people, okay? It was just the little bushes under the freeway before you get to the neighborhood.
That was it?
That was the Bay Area.
That little patch?
Yeah.
Little patch.
We used to play hide and go seek under the freeway.
God damn.
Well, best place. It was the best place. Best place in the projects to go and build a clubhouse. And if you was into engineering and you're trying to build a flood or a dam, that was the place.
Damn.
So we make a little clubhouse right there. And there used to be a guy who, his brother's a friend of mine on Facebook. They used to call him Dog Man Jackson. Remember Dog Man?
What's up with that fool?
That fool used to walk around with 10 stray dogs.
Oh, 10 dogs.
And he would get all the leftover food from Big Mama.
Big Mama. Yeah, Big Mama. That little restaurant?
Say may I.
Old Utah food. She worked at Utah Elementary, so she was like the janitor. So when the food was in the trash can, Big Mama would just take all the leftovers and feed the village.
Yeah, she'll stand right there before you throw your food away And then she'll tell you to recycle the cardboard plates because she will recycle it because she'll stack those cardboards up. And then on the side, she had like the busboy tray.
Right.
She'll go like this. She'll have one bowl where everybody threw the leftover chili. And on the other side, they had a cornbread with the leftover cornbread and then the peas. Uh-huh. And she had it separated. And sometimes fat motherfucker like me will want extra, right? I didn't throw shit away, right?
Fuck that.
It's embarrassing, bro. I'll be standing in line, not throwing nothing away. And he goes, Big Mama, can I have that cornbread? And then she said, you better say, may I?
If you want to stop. Right,
and I'll be right there. And then people are throwing their food away. I'm like, they're throwing their food away. And I'm standing there, may I have a cornbread? And then she'll give me a cornbread with one bite on it.
Oh!
So what? It's still
true
good?
Story, yep.
And I'll eat that motherfucker, yep. Dog. I'll put that shit in a little napkin.
Mm-hmm.
Save that for later.
Like Napoleon Dynamite.
Hell
shit.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
That was some good
five
cornbread.
More hours to eat. Sometimes it was coffee cake, but mm-hmm. with peanuts on top.
Those hard peanuts. That government cheese peanuts.
I know the fucking cheetahs taste like grape nuts. So Big Mama was always there, bro. She was like that. Her voice and everything was like the comedian Mom Bailey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but she was a real deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you look at Madea, all those characters, right. There's actual real people like that.
Right.
Big Mama was mm-hmm. there. Big old heart,
yep.
giving hugs. And then she was a fucking volunteer, I think.
Yeah, she was. I don't think she ever got a paycheck.
Never got a paycheck. She just stood there, and she was there like, she's a nice woman, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Long boobs, probably.
Yeah.
Nice. I don't even know where she lived or if she had kids, but I just know that if you wanted a cupcake, you better say, may I? So that person, Dog Man, he has stray dogs, and he will take all the leftover food from Utah, and then he'll go feed all the dogs food. And when he got out of school, all those dogs were waiting by the gate for that food to get out.
True story.
They knew where their meal was coming from. Mean recycling.
But during those times, when we were kids, it was peaceful, bro. I mean, every once in a while, there'd be a shootout, and they got to close down the school. But it never came inside of the school. Like, nobody ran inside.
Right.
It was safe, bro. I mean, remember the days, bro? Like, we talked about it here. Remember when the pecan pool would close? And then everybody would show up.
That was the best time.
The
nice,
best
man.
Times.
Yeah.
That's when you could take dives off the roof.
Off the roof. That was all the super athletic people. They're just jumping off the roof. I remember one guy missed it.
Oh, fuck. Are you serious?
Yeah, running right into the lifeguard chair. Pop. Yeah.
We talked about this, and I was telling Rodrigo, nah, bro, as soon as the swimming pool closed, there was Cortez brothers there.
That's when
the
party started?
There were like 10. They were family deep. Those fools were the only family with fucking bolt cutters. And they'll sit there with the bolt cutters under the chair and wait. And then it's funny, man. It's so funny how many kids were standing outside waiting for the pool to close.
Man.
More than people were ready to pay, huh?
That night swimming.
All went down in the summertime?
Night swimming, bro. With they had a music box on the plan and kids running around. And
barbecuing, too.
And baseball pants and, you know, football pants and still people got their flags on them. It was just
And then there was those drugs being taken, right? But it was so hidden, like when you were kids. Mm. Like, they were on the side, like some gangs, some cholos. And they were back then when the blacks and gangs and Mexican gangs were all like, they were not enemies, but they were like, they grew up each other. So there was
cool.
There was no fighting. It was just like maybe a fist fight every once in a while or somebody wrote their name in their neighborhood. But for the most part, they were like, everybody from that side was one unity.
Mm.
Family, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, they help each other out. Like if they saw your mom looking for you, they will right away rat you out. I saw Paul over there fucking around. Go get him.
Yeah. you had surveillance and people throughout the projects. And that's one of the things. Everybody's mom was your mom. And if you did something wrong, they'll snitch you out. That's why I couldn't be a gangbanger too long, because I was losing weight. And I was like, the mothers, my friend mother, stopped feeding me those quesadillas. You know what I'm saying? I was losing weight. I couldn't be like Snoop or something like that. So I'm like, man, you know, I'm losing my meal. I can't. So I said, I picked up a basketball, man. So because, you know, I was losing all my, I was losing calories, you know, because they saw everything. They knew everything. They saw everything. Once I changed my whole outfit and put a khaki suit on, said, oh, Pablo did it. Pablo did it. Pablo did it. That was, my meal was gone. No more Mexican food. No more food for me.
No more Fidel.
Now that's it.
And
that was it.
A lot of the people in the neighborhood learned Spanish. Like they spoke some kind of Spanish. Like, right. Like if you're black, I remember I saw this black guy from the neighborhood ordering Mexican food. Yeah, man, dos burritos de al pastor, please. The al pastor is what
pastor,
I like.
Yeah, al pastor, bondigas. Con queso, yeah. You had to know how to talk that Espanol because that was the main food. We had to eat. And then one thing about the projects, you know, the black families, once they got their welfare check, they didn't know how to buy food for the whole month. You know, I'll look in a grocery bag and I see filet mignon. You know, I said, Mom, you spent $80 on 8 ounces of meat. You know, and what is turkey ham? You know, turkey and ham, like they will go out their way and spend too much money on just on basic nutrition. Where the Mexican families, they eat the whole month. You know, they have something every day of the month. Where the black family, from the 1st to the 15th, that was it. Like, we had the best food, but then after that, 15 days, we were starving.
Back to asking for credit.
Yeah. It was credit time.
it was like that, man, because I remember, before, I was seeing people get their welfare checks, and they're walking around, man, happy, bro, with their happy meals.
A check.
Happy with their Donna burger.
That Donna burger. that grease pit.
That's the place you call the grease pit?
The grease pit, then you had Donna's.
Yeah.
Donna's was like, Korean owned, and then you had on the grease pit around the corner.
The grease pit was on the corner, huh?
Oh, man, that had the best chili cheese fries.
I never ate there.
You never ate there?
No. I never made it that far. I just made it to Donna's.
Oh, well,
Donna's was a Korean restaurant.
Right.
It was owned by a Korean lady.
Right, right.
And she sold food out of a boat.
Damn.
Yeah.
There was nowhere to sit. There was only one bench to sit on.
That's it.
And then she'll go like this. What do you want?
Mm-hmm.
I want the Donna special. Close the door. You pay her and she'll close it.
$2.50.
That's how much it was?
That was $2.50. Yeah, you had a burger, fries, and a soda.
It was a good burger.
That was a good burger. It was real meat.
$2.50, bro.
God damn.
And let me tell you, man, when you eat like that every day, your welfare check will go gone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that meal, after 1 hour later, you're hungry again. But my dad had a job, so even we didn't make that lot of money. My mom, I used to be like, you're eating steaks, but I would look at people like, your mom, they're fucking eating steaks over there. And she would tell me, they're on welfare, that's why. And I said, well, maybe we should get on welfare then. No steaks.
It was only 16 ounces, man. It was like $80 for 16 ounces. You got like 8 people in the family. So it was like, you know, and then they broiled it. So it became a piece of bacon. So it was enough for everybody.
Let me tell you what my mom would have done with that meat, bro. She would have boiled it. She would have boiled the meat right. And then shredded it with her fingers.
Right.
And then make taquitos, and there's still like a gang of meat left. Mix that meat with some eggs, and then the other meat, that'll be your dad's whack-ass sloppy joe. See, what my mom would do, man, she'll buy like 1 pound or I don't know how many pounds of ground beef, and I'm thinking, yeah, we're going to have hamburgers.
Done.
Man, we have no fucking hamburgers, man. My mom would put that ground meat, add potatoes, and 2 cans of Libby's vegetables in it.
Yeah.
And we're eating beef with vegetables and rice. It's getting sad.
Yeah, we wouldn't have made hamburgers. Like I said, man, 15 days credit. We wouldn't have hamburgers for every day between 1st and the 15th and next 15 days credit.
And a lot of the little, like there was no, explain to these people how far was the biggest supermarket? Like we want to go to Bonds or Safeway.
Oh, yeah, it was, you know. It was unheard of because we, about 5-6 miles just to get to what? Food for Less or something like that. And so we, you know, everything was pretty much shopped right on First Street, you know, in the liquor store.
We were forced to buy in that.
Yes, forced to buy. So your money was going like, you know, you get
overpriced.
Yeah, overpriced.
You know, while the milk at Safeway was $1.75,
right,
here in the hood was $2.50.
$2.50.
Damn, mean Jack.
Everything was this high price.
Oh, and then the earthquake came, and then everything tripled.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Whittier, 1990? You were there during the Whittier earthquake?
Yep.
How scared was your mom, bro?
And Project Strong, though, man. That's
see, when the 1994, there was a big Whittier Narrow earthquake, right? And let me tell you, man, we were scared to go back in the house. Our neighborhood went from, like you said on your book, went from looking like a third world country to a refugee camp.
Yeah, all tents outside. Yeah, tent city.
And people slanging out of the tents.
Right, tent city.
Yeah. Nobody wanted to stay inside?
Nobody.
Yeah, but we'll put our tent next to a tree.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was outside sleeping, you know, doing an earthquake.
Every time somebody went in, my brother went in the house to take a shower, I would go stand outside the shower scared them doing this. He goes, what the fuck, man? What are you doing? Hey, bro, it's time for you to get the fucking shower, bro. Next.
How long that shit last for?
For all summer.
Yeah.
Damn.
And then one night we all went, and then it was just our neighborhood, okay? Our neighborhood was Tent City.
Right.
It looked like a scene out of MASH or Rambo or a prison or a POW camp. There was tents, bro, and tents, man, like Woodstock.
Right.
Tents. And one day after 2 weeks, everybody was got confident enough. We all went back in. Right. Then 4 a.m.
Right.
Everybody went back outside. It was a fucking 6.0.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
The first one was 7.1, 6.0, and the aftershocks were 4.0. Earthquake scared the shit out of me still.
That was a strong one.
It was tough times, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those earthquakes, you know, it's crazy.
Where he lived in the projects, it was gated. Like, it was, how many tiers were there?
Man. Wow.
Three, right?
Yeah, it was like a university. It was like a modern day university, man. Just dorms, you know, sections, you know, and if you was from a gang, cause you had like five gangs within that, or, you know, four or five gangs within that section. So you couldn't just walk from one patio to the next patio because you was crossing into enemy territory. So once you became a gang member, you gave up all rights to wonder.
You give up your rights to be adventurers. Right.
Yeah, you gave your rights to fly around. You were stuck. You know, it was nowhere else you could go into and figure out. Because we had a chance to meet everybody when we was in elementary school. Then during the teens, it was everything was locked down. Like, you didn't see Manuel since elementary, like 6 years ago. So it was like, you know, it
they just, live
it
in
was
the same
crazy.
Neighborhood.
In the same neighborhood. And it was like everybody was growing up, getting beers and tall. And I'd be like, I'm 6'6", man. I can't. Like, it got to a point where it was like, man.
You were 6'6 at 12?
I was about like 6'3".
That's tall.
Yeah, I was about 13. I was about,
lanky ass fool.
Lanky. Big dinosaur.
What's up with my homeboy pterodactyl right here?
Yeah.
And then, dude, we went through like some good times, man, growing up. Like, good times, man. Right. We're our elementary years was probably one of the best times growing up.
Yeah.
Because Halloween was the best time because we could go in with costumes out of the neighborhood and we wouldn't get judged.
Yeah, I was a black mariachi, you know. Yeah, my mom just put the outfit on me. Said, "Man, go out there and you know." And I just got used to it, you know. And so, you know, she put a little pillowcase around me and my dad old cowboy hat, and I was a black mariachi.
Raymond Ayala.
I made it work, you know what I'm saying? So I even repeated in Halloween, Cinco de Mayo. I had it, you know, it was my yearly outfit.
Yeah, he plays sax. So it says on your book that you were born in New Orleans.
No, I was born in Shreveport.
Shreveport, yeah, in Louisiana.
I'm a Hunt. You know, I'm from the Hunt family, which is
a big family, huh?
Shreveport, yeah, top northern Louisiana. You know, so
Hunt's tomato soup.
Yeah, that was, hey, my white girl, you know, I always use El Pato. So one day I came home. She said, I'm making you Spanish rice. I said, we don't got no El Pato, though. So she put out some Hunt's paste. I'm like, nah, you messed that up.
Yeah, my mom used to make Spanish rice with, not paste, with tomato sauce.
Not the El Pato?
No.
You never used El Pato?
We used chilaquiles my mom used
for the Spanish rice. You don't use the El Pato?
No, man. She would use tomato sauce. Because my mom was like, we have cans. We don't have El Pato sauce. Okay. My mom would make chilaquiles. She'll put tortillas and then pour El Pato sauce.
Okay.
Which, by the way, El Pato sauce is the best sauce for enchiladas and chilaquiles, bar none. Man. None.
I keep a green can, yellow can, red can in my house all the time.
Spicy.
That's
spicy.
My wife, by the way, and Paul, you got to check this out. Every time I would introduce Fred's, I would make those chilaquiles with eggs.
Okay.
And I would put the El Pato sauce over it, mix it all up with a little side of beans, and then put a little queso fresco on top.
Okay.
The one was coming with water in the bottom.
Yeah.
And my friends go, oh my God, it's the best chilaquiles I ever had in my life.
Mm-hmm.
My wife makes them now, vegan.
Vegan style.
Vegan style. No egg, real egg, fake eggs.
Fake
tofu.
Eggs. But it tastes pretty good. Much
good. Because El Pato sauce, undeniable.
Yeah. Oh, man.
My baby mama's grandma, my baby mama's mom, when I was living in Pico Aliso, she used to make steaks and put El Pato sauce over it. And that shit was good.
El Pato make anything good, you know.
The real Duck Dynasty.
Hey, that El Pato make anything good.
It's funny how that fucking place blinded us. And made our eyes watery, but the motherfuckers never hired us.
Case. Yeah, I wanted a case of El Pato. Yeah, I couldn't get a case.
And they wouldn't hire nobody from the projects, man. That's what pisses me off.
Wow. I didn't get that far.
No, right?
I didn't get that far inside.
Like, I would try to apply for jobs in the hood, in the projects.
Right.
And as soon as I put my address, you live back there, we're going to hire you.
They'll
throw my application in a trash can.
They'll
mix it up with a pato sauce.
Wow.
That's
what was
tough.
That like? Why did your mom leave Shreveport?
Yeah, man. You know what? That's like one of the weirdest things. I think she had a conflict with my dad. Something was going on, and she was like, let's book it. So it was me, my oldest sister, and she was pregnant at the time. And she landed in L.A., you know, and she didn't have she had like one relative. She was already older. So it was just us three in the projects. So, and that was like, what, early 80s. And it was a different time. But that time, like, quickly just became what was mellow, and it just everything became rapid that quick.
It's from 78, bro, in 7 years. 78. Let me tell you, man, there was drugs in the neighborhood, like maybe some PCP being sold, a lot of marijuana, some good Thai bud in the hood. We got the best Thai bud. Like, you want to tie the original Thai sticks marijuana, you go to our hood. Pico Aliso, the Thailand.
Yeah,
it was a place to buy Thai.
Right.
These kids, 13, 12-year-olds selling buds, long sticks, bro. And back then, I didn't even know what that shit was. I didn't even smoke weed back then. I didn't even know what that was. To me, I thought all weed was the same. And then these people right here, they used to hang around. And I used to hang around with they were break dancers first.
Right.
Remember that?
Pop lockers.
We were pop locking first.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, 83 came, and then crack shows up.
Oh, man.
Nobody break dancing no more.
That messed
it everything. Changed everything.
Yeah, your stepdad ain't taking you up to Hollenbeck Gym to boxing lessons no more. He's standing on the corner smoking crack. So it just quickly changed from fathers and, you know, and it just went haywire.
Quick. Yeah, man, because before... Like, if a dad saw, a parent saw you and they knew you, like, they call him Pablo because he hung out with all the Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
And a black mom would know me, and they go like this, oh, man, he goes Felipe. And they would tell you, oh, he ain't Felipe no more. They call him Batman now. And then they'll tell you, I know your mom, and you don't have no respect for that woman no more. Yeah, I know. I know you know her. And that's it. And before crack, I know your mom. I know. I'm going home right now. Don't call her.
Right.
And then the dad started smoking crack and didn't give a fuck about you no more.
Right.
They'll look at you and go, are you Sally now?
Right.
Did you got jumped in early?
Yeah, I got jumped in early. Jumped in.
Cripping and sagging?
Yeah, I had a whole khaki suit and sagging and, you know, all that.
The original saggers, by the way.
Yeah. From breakdance into a sagger.
How old were you?
12, probably.
Yeah, I was 13.
Damn.
Yeah, 13. Junior high school.
Yep. Hollenbeck.
And that's what you said in your book is when the shit got crazy is when you got intermediate school, right?
Yeah. And Hollenbeck, it was more, you know, I was trying to get an education. You know, I was trying to figure it out. And like I said, things like Felipe said, during that time, everybody was just cool. Blacks, Mexicans, everybody was just, everything was cool. But then once the drugs came in, just everything just erupted.
People start getting rich.
Yeah, people start getting rich.
Rich. Now, I remember people, like, all of a sudden, like, the first Crip I ever saw, like, I didn't know what a Crip was. I just know that I used to see this black dude sagging hard, riding a beach cruiser, right? Uh-huh. And this fool had a mohawk before mohawks were cool. And I said, I'm not gonna lie to you, I thought that motherfucker looked cool.
Right.
Because he was styling and profiling, bro. Uh-huh. He had those fucking Chuck Taylors, and they were like split down. And the shoelaces were the fat blue ones. And this fool had a blue rag, and he was sagging. And I asked, man, who is that guy? Oh, they call that fool Cricket. Uh-huh. I said, wow, that fool is a cool motherfucker. Right there. So I tried to be his friend. And then he was the first guy I saw. And I said, you know, where did he come from? Hmm. But then later on, I started noticing that the older guys that were in gangs, they didn't dress like that. They were like the loose style, huh?
Yep. You know, khakis came in and you know, everybody, it just erupted. Everybody was looking the same pretty much.
and now everybody, you started noticing that people have better shoes now.
Yeah.
Everybody had shitty shoes.
Yeah, everybody had the 10 pair of khakis, and you know you had Regals, Cadillacs popping up, and you know, making money. Yeah, it was big money. You had downtown just right outside, so you know the consumer base was coming straight from after work 5-6 o'clock, and you know
lawyers,
everybody, and before you even was a gang member. You had to learn how to sell drugs, so that was just part of the trend. Like that was just an occupation that all kids in the projects at that time picked up. Like you didn't have to be a gang member to sell drugs because everybody had access to it, you know. And that's how crazy it was. And then it got to the point where you had to be from the gang to have access to it. But it was a time like 6 months to a year where everybody and their mother had access to drugs to sell to people from downtown, and everybody was selling it.
Everybody.
Yeah.
And before that, you could be a wife and a husband and not be in a gang and sell out of your house and nobody gonna fuck with you. Then all that shit changed.
And that's that 6 month to one year window.
It was like a 6 months to a year window when, like I said, it was
gang just started.
Everybody was out there. You had people when you had like 30 people in each patio. And it was that much clientele coming in and out of the projects. That it didn't care what, like everybody was making money, so it didn't really care if you was Crip, S. It didn't because they was going everywhere. The project was loaded with clients.
Loaded.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm not exaggerating, but sometimes it'll be like the end of that movie, Field of Dreams, when all those cars are coming into the hood. You don't know why? Because if you sell it, they will come.
Yeah, and it was crazy because you see, you know, you watch. Like I said, doctor, lawyers, you know, people with like Christmas presents in their back trunk and car seats and like people like, what? Like, wow, you know, and like I said, that 6 months to a year window, you had access to it and then you had to be part of something.
Then it all changed.
Yeah.
And that's when the cops started coming in there and busting fools and fools going to jail and fools started killing each other.
Regulation. Like it just everything just dried up pretty much. Everything was just, you know, just... You know.
Then jackers came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Were they from the neighborhood too? Or motherfuckers coming out of just
everybody,
from other
everybody from the project was from the projects.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was like, there was never nobody outside the project messing with the project, but the people in the project. You know, it was all it was always domestic violence.
Everybody wanted always. To get the revenue.
It was always everybody domestic violence. Yeah, the project was domestic violence. It was always domestic violence.
And then, like, you started like seeing like families go down, bro.
Yeah, quick. Yeah, no, quick.
Quick, bro.
Like, really? Strong fam. I'm talking about strong families. Like,
really?
People, like,
strong
you look
family
up to,
groups.
Yeah, like strong families, man. Like, you're like, wow, you know, I can't even knock on that door anymore and get, you know, get a slice of bread or, you know, it's just they moved out or, it's, you know, something happened.
Or someone took over the house.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
All of a sudden that crossed the crack, yeah. the crack house. Crack like, house. And nobody's busting it, nobody's writing it out.
Right.
Now you would just, you could, like, if you were from a gang and you had, like, you know, you knew somebody that did drugs, you could pretty much rent out his whole house for a week.
Right.
And then move to the next house.
Wow.
And then nobody was saying nothing. Right. And then all of a sudden, man, there was a big bust in Aliso Village. And remember that guy got caught? They found a trash can full of money?
Yeah.
And he was the first guy when he wrote that law, you can't sell drugs within 1,000 feet of a school? A school.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were selling drugs all day when we were kids. Heroin.
Right.
And then that guy, he was the first guy they got, and he got, what, 20 years?
So, yeah.
Made an example out of that.
Big example out of him.
And then it stopped. Like, everything pretty much slowed down, but it was still it was still moving somewhat, you know, but everything pretty much was a halt. And now people, you know, it just became now people you grew up with, neighbors, you know, playing football with and basketball with and, you know, how I'm going to get this location? What's the last location? So, you know, it became about territory and it just messed everything up.
I was telling a friend of mine, because he didn't understand, you know, I was telling him, no, bro, shit changed. Like, like if you were from the hood, like, your porch might be your territory, but your back porch ain't.
Right.
And you couldn't go into the back door no more because that belongs to Dukes or somebody.
Right.
But you're, the, and then what was true about, what your book hit me hard was when you said that the basketball courts of the elementary school of our Utah.
Right.
Because, see, there was the auditorium, right? And that auditorium area, and then there was a preschool, and that preschool area was all Cadillacs, bro, Brad, all Cadillacs. Mm-hmm. People would get locked up, and their Cadillac would still be there waiting for them when they get out. And so you have to be from no – if you want to play basketball, you have to be from no gang. Wow. Because that's somebody else's hood.
Right, right. You had to because you was right in the middle of some. Yeah, you was right in the middle of somebody. So, you know, that was the thing. They and the crazy thing, they all grew up playing sports. And it got to a time where you just hanging out in the patio and no more sports. You know, I'm like, man, you know. You know, that's why, you know, luckily I passed it up and was able to roam around the territories and see a lot of things that a lot of people was just stuck in a place. And, to this day, I still feel bad for those people that was stuck in those patios.
Yeah, I do feel bad for those people, man, because those guys that were at the patio, like, even if they're still living in the hood, even though it's changed, motherfuckers still the same.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's like time stood still for
them. Right, they stagnant. Like, they stay, like, in a mental coma or something. You know, it's like... You know, when your body go through a physical trauma, you know, the doctor will induce a coma so to protect everything else. So I think the trauma of the projects was so heavy that time just stopped. You know, and you know, that's that mental coma.
Also, what I got out of your book is that living there in those projects or whatever project you are, but our projects. Right. You wrote that it felt like you were living in a third world country.
Yeah. And, you know, at that time when, because everybody became, like, everybody was trying to eat whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't no outside. You know, it was just this place.
The pit stop in Donna's.
That you know, and that's, when you call it third world, is they don't see opportunity. I think a third world is, it means they don't see opportunity. And the people in this environment couldn't see a opportunity. So that's why I call it a third world, because the opportunity was so far gone. They couldn't find that opportunity.
When I read that part, I remember I did a show for Father Greg Boyle at Homeboy Industry. Mm-hmm. And then I was trying to invite some of the gangsters, you know, to my show. I had like a bunch of free tickets. Mm-hmm. And I remember I walked up to this one gangster, and I know who he was. Mm-hmm. You know, he's younger than me, but I try to explain to him. He goes, where's the Laugh Factory, homie? It's over there in Hollywood. You got to take the one north. And he just cut me off right there. Hmm. Fuck that shit, homie. I don't know shit about no one north.
Right.
Like, he don't know because he don't go, he don't get on the one north. Right. He's never been out. Right. Like, he don't know what's it like to walk around the Beverly Center and look around.
Right.
That's not his thing. Right. It'll probably never be his thing.
Right.
He don't know nothing about that.
Right. And I think you have to go through that at a certain age. Like, I think Paul Revere saved my life because hopping on a bus at 13, my mind was still developing, you know, and the patio wasn't the only place that, you know, if I was in that patio for the next, like, 2 more years, I think, you know, my whole mind state probably would have been different. But that bus ride, you know, from First Street all the way to what, 26, you know, just traffic. You know, I remember Will.i.am, when our bus used to break down, Estrada Court's bus used to come by and pick us up, and Will.i.am used to be on the bus. He used to be in the corner writing his lyrics, and you know that, even like just seeing different the outside, I think that saved, just gave us a different perspective. Even though going back to the projects, it gave us a whole different vision. Like, I want that house. I want that house.
Exposure.
Like, I want that house. I want that lemon tree. You know, so
I want to drive that car.
Yeah. So we saw that.
Get a car I'm gonna get when I grow up.
Yeah, we saw so many things that we visualized. Like, we. Like, yeah, I wanna be in that household. I wanna be like that family. And you know, a lot of people in the project that have access probably to that mental stimulation, that vision stimulation. You know,
it's somehow living there. It just cut down looking forward to anything.
Yeah, it's like when your heart stops and you need that stimulator, you know, and these people needed something to stimulate.
A little jolt.
Yeah, if even if it was came from, like, from somebody from the environment, because, you know, I remember I used to work for Atapiac, and Manuel, he taught me the best lessons, you know. And
you took Atapiac?
Yeah.
How many, have you eaten the big Manuel special?
Yeah.
You can finish it?
Man, I tried to.
Tell our listener, first of
all,
about Manuel's Tepeyac, how famous it is, how big that line is.
Oh, man. Way out. Man.
How much pork is in that big burrito?
Big old burrito. I had to wash those pots, man. You know, Tepeyac sponsored my Evergreen football team. So I had they had to pick two players to go in every weekend to wash these pots. And, you know, Mexican families have these pots, you know, bigger than, you know, Prius, little tall, great pots. So Manuel will be in the middle of the kitchen and the dishwasher, and he'll just pass these pots over.
Give you tequila shots.
Still hot, you know. They're still hot. I'm like, man, Manuel, man, these pots still hot. So I'm digging my hand deep in and trying to get the beans all stuck in the corner of the pot. Mm. And he's like, nah, man, you got to clean that pot. That pot ain't clean. So I go home all burnt. You know, fired up. He said, "Are you a football player?" Yeah, I'm a football player. So the next day, I came in with my whole football uniform on. He said, "Yeah, man, I know you're a football player." I said, "Yeah, I'm a football player. I'm not a firefighter, man. You burning me up."
How did you get out of it? Because I'm reading your book, and it looked kind of hard to get out of being. So you were slanging dope too, right? Like everybody else.
But you know, I started slanging dope before I was actually in the game. You know,
just like me.
Yeah, you know,
interning.
Yeah. So the gang didn't. You know, so when I got into the gang, I got more into the specifics of selling drugs. But I was, when I was like 10 years old, I was like probably like in East LA hood or different territories, because everybody was cool with it. So it was no problem if you were in territory. You could be in any territory, and it wasn't no big deal. But once I got involved in the gang, then became a specific type of how you sell it. Yeah.
Can't be selling over here no more.
Can't be selling
over here. Yeah, man. And then, you knew like what specific patio sold what. Nah. Like, oh, nah, bro, don't go over there, bro. All they fuck with PCP over there. Hmm. I got robbed my first time selling dope. Rest in peace, Coco. Remember him?
Yeah.
He had the little mole right here.
Uh-huh.
Man, that was my best friend in the whole wide world. Mm. my friend Coco, he passed away in Atlanta, Georgia. He died in prison. He used to have a mole, like my mole, in the middle of his, on top of his lip. And him and I would have, that's one thing about the projects, man, that was very, we didn't need Comedy Central. Right. There was bagging sessions all constantly. And it wasn't like bagging, like the dude, like, your mom was so fat. Fuck that. This was personal shit.
Right.
Like, if I knew everything about Paul Hunt's family, his family's going to get roasted. And if they knew, I knew everything about this guy over here, fool is on. And I'd be like bagging hard. And there was some motherfucker that should have been comics.
Oh, yeah, it was some good people out there.
Good.
I was a good people.
Fools making people cry, huh?
Oh, man. We used to have rap. We used to have comedy battles, and you had Pico Side and Liso Side. You had Red Face George. You know, we used to meet up, and Eloy from Roosevelt. You know, comedy was you coming from a place like that, you had to laugh. You had to create a way to make people laugh.
I remember, man, I used to make that fool you mentioned, I used to make that fool cry, bro. That fool you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And then that fool still tries to clown me as adults. I'm like, bro, I made it, dog.
Right.
Your mom is still asking for rides. Yolanda still asking for rides.
Yeah,
bro.
Yolanda, yeah, we always talking about Yolanda. Yeah, that was cold, man.
This dude's mom, right. she used to try to befriend your ass just to get a ride for her for kids to school. Like, she'll show up with a plate of food at your house, and then she'll ask for a favor. Yeah. I used to tell that fool, bro, I saw your mom dancing at the Cobra Bar, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
They were giving her bus tokens.
I used to get red faced all the time. He'd go home crying all the time.
Crying, bro. And then, as an adult, he think he's funny now, bro, because nobody bags no more. I'm like, motherfucker, you get punched, dog. This is serious, dog.
He finally got good a little bit.
Fuck you on your cupcakes, dog.
He said, yeah, those cupcakes was good, though. He had some bomb cupcakes.
Dude, that fool, remember, I don't know if you remember when that fool, mom was dating that young fool. Remember that?
Yeah.
Chico Check. It was like a young fool.
Young, dog? Younger than him?
Younger than me.
Yeah, doing pull-ups outside.
Got a lifter.
Yeah, that do no pull-ups.
It's like your mom dating the youngest paisa in the hood. That's fun. But that fool was funny too, though. Don't fuck with Chico shit. He was funny. Dude.
It was funny back then, man.
You remember my brother Angel?
Yeah.
My brother Angel owed him 79 cents.
Uh-huh.
That motherfucker went to my house, told my mom, can you please call Angel? He's not here. Well, you know, he owes me 75 cents.
Right.
Then my mom walked to my brother and fucking practically strangling him. You had a guy here looking for you for fucking 75 cents. And I said, who? Come on. You don't know who you owe 75 cents to? And I said, yeah, bro, Chico Shek. You must have owed him for a bootleg movie or something.
75 cents. But that was $4 back in the days, was it?
Yeah. People fight you with 50 cents.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. 25 cents, man. That was a big thing. A bag of Doritos and, you know, something. Yeah, yeah. 25 cents was big back then. Yeah.
Did you ever, like... There was a place which was neutral for a while on Pecan Park on the corner. There used to be a place called Murillo's.
Oh yeah, torta spot.
That lady would sell a torta with jamon, bro. Little strip.
Mm-hmm,
you could see through that motherfucker. Yeah, yeah. And she put mayonnaise, cheese, tomato, and she knows not everybody like jalapeno. She'll put a whole jalapeno on top and wrap it.
Damn.
With a bag of chips and a soda, $1.50.
Yeah, that's it.
Damn.
And that was the best sandwich. And, you know, after you swim, after swim time, you're going to find you some quarters.
Get revitalized.
Hey, you're going to find you some quarters, man.
Dude, I used to come out of the swimming pool hungry, bro.
Yeah, that was the worst
hungry.
Time.
Hungry. Hungry.
All that chlorine, huh?
Looking for a 10 cents on the floor to buy an ice cup.
Right.
So, where Paul grew up...
Mm-hmm.
There was a back store. There was a front store. But see, once those stores closed, there was a lady. And the only reason I know her because I go to the Pico Aliso page.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lady called the Candy Lady.
Right down the street.
Explain to the people what the fuck the Candy Lady did. The
Candy Lady, man. That was commerce. That was Wall Street.
Her house was 7-Eleven before 7-Eleven.
Then you had my tias which was
tacos, right?
Well, there was a fruit truck. It was a mobile Trader Joe's. But yeah, the candy lady, man, she had everything: ice cups, Levi's, polo shirts. You know,
all the colored bullies.
Uh huh. Everything. She, you know, and my, you know, my mom probably.
She wouldn't let you. I don't remember. Did she let you in, or you could buy out of the door?
You know what? She was right three doors down from me, so she knew me. So she said, hey, Pablo. So, you know, she let me in sometimes, you know.
Sometimes.
She let me in sometimes.
You would knock. You would knock and ask her, candy lady, que quieres, mijo?
Yeah.
Dame dos papitas y una soda, por favor. And she said, $2. $2. Then you pay her, bro. And she was selling candy out of her house before anybody was selling crack out of their house.
Right.
And there was, everybody had a store. Like, I know where I grew up, the people next door was a guy named Koala, and they sold nachos, bro. Nachos, bro.
It's the nachos Koala.
Fucking nachos. And then Melanie's mom, Hong's mom, Melanie, we had her here. Mm-hmm. She was on the other side selling ice cups, bro. Mm-hmm.
Damn.
And getting back to Murillo's, by the way, that lady was always pregnant, by the way. And also, Murillo's was like a rite of passage for teenagers. Mm. Like, everybody bought their first 40 there because he didn't give a fuck about you're 21 or not. Which nobody did, huh?
Right.
They didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, it was easy.
If his mom wrote a note, saw Paul cigarettes and a 40, it's okay.
That note, and that powerful note, you know. Yep. Mom seen you at the store with a note all the time.
Man, it was crazy, dog. Mm-hmm. That was crazy. So how long did this candy lady exist for?
Man, she was there all, like, throughout my whole years. You know, like, you know, from, you know, I guess, you know, 78 to, you know, 2000 till the projects, they demolished. You know, she was always there. You know, candy lady was always open. She was always there.
See, that kind of, like, see, a candy lady wouldn't have survived past 96 because, man, people start taxing fools now. Candy lady, sorry, but you're going to owe me $5.
Right.
It's like every spot became territorial now. It's like somebody made up a fake graph line where you could walk, where you could sell, who to buy from.
Right.
Man, it just became chaos.
Motherfuckers, you know, riding that action and shit. Taxing,
I guess, like 96, like you said, money was, you know, but Chachi, man, like she been around, man. She, you know, she been around for years, so she just kept, production up, you know. That place,
she must have not made that much. Huh? She made some cash though. Her shoes and fuels.
Oh yeah. It was always, you know, either the milkman was getting your money or the candy lady was getting your money.
Yeah, she'll buy all her stuff at Smart and Final.
Oh yeah,
in bulk.
All the M&M's, Snickers you want.
That's crazy, though.
Yeah, so when my brother was going to Paul Revere, he told me he was going to get suspended because he would show up with an ice chest with 6 cold frozen Pepsis.
Hmm.
And then he'll sell them for a buck, I guess.
Right.
To his kids and teachers. He said, teacher, welcome to a can I get a Pepsi? Hold on, let me get you a Pepsi. Psst, here you go. But everybody who grew up in my neighborhood is a born hustler.
Yeah, you had to.
Born. Your mom sold Avon, whether you sold Avon, it's a hustler mentality.
Yeah.
We gotta get ahead in money, but not get ahead out of these projects.
Right. Yeah, we had to figure out a way. You know, I remember, you know, I used to go downtown and take the guest tags off jeans and come up with like a bag of guest tags and take them over to the candy lady. And then I'll buy like some cheap no brand jeans, like 6 pair, and then have the candy lady. She had a sewing machine. So, you know, I give her about $10. And next thing you know, I have fresh 6 pair of fresh guest jeans. You know, nobody never seen them before. I just sell them to my friends.
Fucking candy lady. I didn't know she was selling jeans too.
Well, yeah, she'll sell Levi's. Yeah, she have a whole outfit for you. Help. No food stamps, though. You gotta come with cash.
I wish I would have been around there bagging at somebody. Fool, your clothes is sponsored by Candy Lady.
Candy Lady sponsored a lot of people's clothes, man.
She had it all, bro. Pens, school supplies.
Are you serious?
Out of a little house. little apartment.
You get a peachy folder. Everything. You get all,
Like if, and I don't know if she sold alcohol, but.
Oh, she has socks.
She has socks.
Yeah.
She'll buy the big old packs, bro. How much are the socks? $2 a pair? Price up like a motherfucker. Yeah, and in the alleys, they cost $5 for a pack of 10, and she's telling them in the project $2 each.
When you need them, that's all you need them.
Yeah, she had a supply.
So we had Scruncho on the podcast two weeks ago, and we were talking about how it was like a lot of dirty ass kids in the neighborhood. And I said, and it goes, those were the best athletes. He was a dirty kid with the best athletes. And I remember, man. Remember, bro, Pecan Park? When we were all good at baseball, but we had no cleats.
No cleats.
Motherfucker will get caught stealing because they're fucking sliding too far. They'll start sliding before they get to second base. That turn, next to you, fool be sliding into right field.
Well, we had no cleats. You know, I used to wear shoes, and they didn't have no bottom on it because Utah pavement, the blacktop was so rough. You play basketball on that court for about 3 months, and there's no bottom to your shoes. So, you know, we was poor, so I had to get some cardboard and put it in my shoe and you know, run around the court, and the referee will blow a whistle because my whole sock is coming out the shoe. But, that's the good times right there. You know, dunking on people with a sock hanging out the bottom.
Smell that.
Yeah.
Swoosh.
Just do it.
He goes, man, did you see that guy? He just hit a triple double with wearing candy lady socks.
No bottom to his shoe. Just scored 36 points.
They got the hops.
Oh, yeah.
What made you dream beyond living in the projects? Me growing up in the projects, I always wanted to leave.
Right.
Like, I will hop on that 33 bus and go to Venice.
Right.
And I'll be in Venice all day and then come back home.
Right.
But I always, in my eyes, I always saw something out there. What?
Right.
What dreams did you have that made you come out?
Right. Well, you know.
It was the ride to school, huh?
No, but that was one of the things. But I think, you know, you had Paul Gonzalez in the neighborhood. You had Chaka. You had Will.i.am's. You had like great people. You had David Isaiah's.
David Isaiah. R.I.P.
Yeah.
Was he your age or older?
He was a couple of years older than me, but you know, he was like a mentor.
David Isaiah, man, he was like the Reggie Bush of the neighborhood.
Yeah,
he had committed suicide in Chico State, from what I hear.
Yeah,
but I thought that was odd though that he committed suicide. I still don't believe it.
Because
he was like. He wasn't the smartest kid, but he was just had an athletic ability, man. Mm-hmm. I think I had Ray Escalera on the podcast.
Okay.
Ray?
Uh-huh.
You know Ray, right?
Oh, right.
Yeah, and we talked about a little bit about David. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to hang around with David Isaiah's cousins, Rayshawn and Lonnie.
Yeah, Rayshawn and Floyd.
And Floyd, and little Lonnie Lee.
Yeah, Lonnie Lee and Lee Lonnie.
Lee Lonnie. Yeah, it was two brothers, Lonnie Lee and Lee Lonnie.
Lee Lonnie, yeah.
And David Isaiah, and I was hanging around with them because I gotta lie to you, I befriended the whole family because they had on TV.
On TV. The select on TV.
Yeah. That was at the poor man's cable in the projects. It was funny, bro. David Isaiah, I guess he goes back to his mom's house, and Lonnie Lee and Rayshawn, they go with their mom's house. So I'm just hanging out there with Bay Boy and Marvin, right?
Right.
And I don't leave. For some reason, I stood there watching because I knew that porno movie was going to start.
Right.
So I was a young kid, and I stood with their older brothers watching porno all night.
Right.
And I even told them, man, because it was a holiday. It goes, man, are you guys hungry?
Mm-hmm.
Mommy tamales. I'll bring them right now. And they said, go bring them. And I remember I ran to go get them, and I fucking got like 7 of them, and I saw them waiting for me. Man, they left the door open waiting for me.
Wow.
The brothers love tamales.
They love tamales, huh?
Every black person in my neighborhood knows how to make chicken mole, bottom line.
I ain't mastered that yet. I got the albóndigas down, and
you know how to make albóndigas soup?
Yeah,
you're a beast, bro.
I'm a beast in the kitchen.
Arbolega soup's a bomb, huh,
oh, yeah,
bro?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's good for, you know, when you're going out, Koreatown, drinking some soda. You know, it's good.
I love arbolega soup, yeah. Man. That's another way to save meat. You put a bunch of rice on it, you boil it.
Expand that ground beef, dog.
Yep.
One of the, there's a part in the book right mm-hmm. there that it was kind of sad, man. Right. I got like, okay. it took me to this.
Okay.
I really felt bad. Like, it is hard. I don't know if it said that when you were, when it said that you said that you got a fucking trophy in every park in LA for basketball.
Yeah.
Because you went out there.
Yeah, I went out there.
And you just challenged motherfuckers.
I went out there. Every park. And balling them fools. East LA, just balling them up. You know?
Balling them up.
Yeah. Every park, I got a trophy from every recreation.
Then,
yeah.
Then the sad part was that one time when you were at Wilson High School.
Right.
And you said that you used to sleep on the bleachers because it got too late and you don't want to pass through seven gang territories.
Yeah.
And this is a sad one. I thought about it. It was so sad because you said that you slept under the bleachers mm-hmm. at the Wilson High School, but then you remembered you had a game the next night,
right.
And you didn't have all you had was your practice jersey.
Right.
So you said, "Fuck it, I have to walk home mm-hmm. now." Mm-hmm. And what really made me sad was that in order for all these gangbangers to know you're not a gangbanger,
right.
you had to bounce your basketball in their neighborhood. Because once you stop bouncing, you became a gangbanger.
I became an enemy. Yeah, if I didn't have a ball on me or anything like that, it was just open season. You know, that's how crazy it was. So, you know, I had to carry a ball even if I wasn't planning on playing that day. I just had my basketball with me because that's how people. That's just how they reacted. You know, so you know that's what I had to do.
So then we hear that basketball. Go, oh, they're shooting now, man. It's Basketball Jones.
Right. they hear the basketball. They're like, oh, that's Paul coming. They just because you know you had a lot of blind spots in the projects. Like it was like a maze. So it was like you had people always creeping on the next territory. So if you just pop up and you have somebody creeping onto somebody else's side, you will just kind of startle them and they just start shooting at you. You know, so that's why I bounced my ball, because if that person on the other side of the wall, which is like I said, the project had a lot of blind spots. So I had every time I hit a corner, I had to bounce that ball. So whoever was on the other side creeping, they'll hear the ball bouncing and you know, just me just throwing on one side and walk up.
Then one time you forgot your ball, huh?
Yeah.
What happened?
And I got shot. got shot in my leg, man.
And you still had a game, huh?
Yeah, against Hollywood, scored 36.
And you went to the game like a soldier.
Yeah, man, wrapped myself up and played Hollywood, man, scored 36 points on them, and nobody knew.
Damn, dog.
Love it. Yeah. Love it, man.
Yeah. Gladiator, dog.
Yeah, and, just had it.
And you said you went to the hospital and you mm-hmm. said, fuck that. You got tired of waiting and left.
Yeah, because it was, I thought you just, you know, I didn't know how severe the injury was. I just knew I was bleeding. So I was like, you know.
The bullet went through?
Yeah, it went right. It went in and out. So.
She must have been burning.
Yeah, but I didn't like, I thought it was still in and I didn't know. My adrenaline was pumping. So, you know, I didn't know how severe it was. So when I went inside, it was like, well. Sit down, where your mother at, start asking questions. So my adrenaline calmed down a little bit. So I'm okay. So I just said, let me just go home. So I ran out the hospital and one of the old Thapiac employees saw me and hopped in a car and he took me home.
That's good. He saw you, man.
Yeah. That's God. It's angels.
Angels, bro. Angels, yeah. Angels in the outfield. Yeah. That's sad, dude. That's so sad. That happened to you.
Yeah.
It's crazy, dude.
You know. You were still in high school too, right?
Yeah. Still in high school, man. You know, and, you know.
The streets were tough, man.
Yeah, it was tough. But, you know, like, I was pretty much like the only kid that was going outside the boundaries. You know, a lot of people at that time, I grew up with, you know, traveling to Watts and Nickerson Gardens with five blacks and five Mexicans on one basketball team. And from that team, and we used to go travel everywhere and beat everybody up because they underestimated us. And from that team at 17, 18, all those guys either gang members now. So I was the only one left playing basketball. So from a great team growing up, from those members, I was the only one just kept going.
Jenny, And did you end up going to college?
You know, that, like I said,
that's the last.
Yeah, that's the last chapter right there. I received a scholarship from Oregon State.
That's what's up.
And, you know, I only played 1 year for Wilson, and just what the coach did. And he was like, here, man, I'm going to send a scout down and give you the information. And, you know, and it got to a point like, you know, you get out the game, you know, you survive all of this, and then your house gets you. Then, you know, so you go home and then, you know, it just turn off. It just becomes something else that you never imagined. When, you know, from all the things you protect yourself from, you're like, nah, my home ain't going to get me.
And they got you, huh?
And they got me.
You got arrested at your own house.
At my own house.
And you thought, and your mom pressed charges.
Yeah. Well, she, the charges were dropped.
Oh, you were fighting your stepdad.
Huh? Yeah. I punched my stepdad, and I thought that, you know.
He was hooked, right?
He was hooked. You know what I'm saying? And
stealing money.
Selling money, and, you know, he needed to have it. You know, he was just going through bad times. And
yeah, it's tough, man.
It was tough.
I remember I was so hooked one time, man. So hooked. I looked at my baby mama, and I didn't like her no more. And I was just angry at her. I fucking snatched her chain off her neck.
Yeah.
Like this, took her chain off her neck. I took all her rings I gave her. Mm. And I remember I had given her money that day. And I said, just give me those $100 back, please. Give it to me, please.
Right.
And I took all the money. Then I told her, man, I was pretty much over.
Right.
And I just fucking used all that, left her stranded with nothing.
Right.
Because when you're a crackhead, man, all you care is about numero uno.
Right, right.
And it's just a crack doing it for you. Because deep down inside, I'm pretty sure your stepdad was a good man in one time.
Right, right.
And I was a good man in one time.
Right.
I'm good now.
Right, right.
But at the time when crack or any kind of addiction gets a hold of you, it's so sad because you're not thinking no more.
Right.
It's like you're walking on you're walking like a zombie, man.
Right, right.
There's no feelings.
Right, right. And like I said, you know, I think I recognized all that that was going on. So, you know, sitting in the cell for 24 hours and to me at that point, it was like, you know, that was it.
And you had just graduated that day, huh?
No, I was going to graduate in 2 weeks. So I was just filling out my financial aid papers and heading to the house and stuff like that. So it was like two weeks for graduation. Yeah.
And what did it tell you when you got to jail?
Man, I like I said, you know, when I got there, you know, I what was going on, and they handed me a little pink slip, which was my charges, and they transferred me to another place to in the glass house.
Glass house with a fucking taco apple pie.
Yeah, glass house, and was in this dark, huge day room, and so. Saw the detective was 7:30 in the morning the next day, and he looked at me and he looked at the file and
saw the hood.
Yeah, he said, "Man, you from Aliso Village?" I said, "Yes, sir." He like, "Nah, that's impossible." And I'm like, "Yeah, my name is Paul Hunt. I'm from Aliso Village." Like, "Nah, that must be impossible. You know, you must be using a different name." You know, he like, "How? Like, how you survive? Like, how you don't have a record? Why you don't have a criminal record? And you come from Aliso Village." He's like, you know, half the people in here come from Aliso Village. So I'm like, "Look, sir, I play basketball." And he looked at me. I showed him my shoes because I had some Jordans on or something like that. But, you know, I showed him some raggedy Jordans. Said, "Sir, I play basketball." And he looked at me and said, "Man, get out of my jail."
That was nice.
He said, "Get out of my jail, man." And so I ran outside trying to call my mom, like, mom, they let me out. She like, "So don't come back home."
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? So I was like, man, you know.
And you're going to graduate in 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks and everything, yeah. She like, don't come back here. So it was like, you know, my whole dream was just playing basketball, getting a scholarship, you know, get my mom out the projects and stuff like that. I had a sister, Zenobia Hunt, that was at Roosevelt, all city, all state. You know, she did big things there. And once I stopped, she stopped. Like, everything just fell off.
So you didn't end up going to Oregon?
Nah.
No, because of the record?
But my girl's from Oregon.
Oh, yeah?
No, I didn't. They didn't charge nothing.
Oh,
yeah, so I just felt at that time, you know, because the energy I placed in playing basketball was for, there was a mathematical reason. And that equation didn't add up. So it was just me now just playing basketball. You know what I'm saying? Like, I couldn't leave my mom, and you know what I'm saying? I could have just, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, you know, well, let me, you know, I didn't see nobody. I just stopped. I didn't go back to school, you know? So that was kind of crazy also.
Yeah.
You know, because it was like, what, 2006, Mario Cantu was my high school basketball coach. And I went up to the Roosevelt Classic in 2006 with my girlfriend. And Mario Cantu was the principal of Roosevelt. And the security guard said, man, that's Paul Hunt. He said, you know who's the principal of Roosevelt? Like who? Like Mario Cantu. So Mario Cantu came running up, because I haven't seen Mario Cantu since that day. He didn't know what happened to me.
Oh, so you never got your scholarship? You never got to Portland?
No, I never went. I never
just lost interest?
I just
man, that's fucked up, man. That makes me sadder now, man. I'm getting I want to cry. I mean, that hey. Yeah, that is sad, man.
Yeah.
That sucks, man.
Because you had, man, they months in you, bro. Wow.
Yeah.
You had it all, man.
Yeah, but, you know, it's always dreams.
Fuck that. You're an author now.
yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's in the book, you know.
Damn, man.
It's in the book. Yeah.
If I had a time machine right now, man, I would save you and not me. I would be there, bro.
Oh, man.
Wow. But so you ended up going to Portland? But you met a girl from Portland.
My girl is from Oregon, Damascus. So I guess that's the gift. You know, that's a gift from Oregon, because, you know, I didn't end up going there, but, you know.
What you end up doing, though?
Man, you know, I end up going to El Monte and been sleeping with one of my childhood friends that was a volleyball player at Wilson and stuff like that. So I had a kid, life, just living life during that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, during that time. So,
and how did you how did you come to write this book?
Man, that book, I've been writing that book for, like, you know, I know it's short, but I've been writing that book for 20 years.
Yeah, you said that you've been writing, ideas
your
whole life.
Yeah. And it's like, it just got to a point where, you know, I just felt like, you know, just the place where I come from and, just all the episodes and all the lost people. And, you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of people had dreams and stories and stuff like that. And, like, at my point, I'm blessed. So I'm like, you know, I'm in a great situation and, you know, for a while. So, but people from that society is still affected by that trauma. So I had to put the book out there to, like I said, that's my theory. That's my side of the story. And, you know, somebody else got a theory, and, you know, and you know.
I like how in your book, you laid out the whole map of the project here.
Yeah.
Like, the whole graph. Where'd you get this at?
That was crazy, because when it was demolishing the projects, I was driving back down from El Monte, and there was only one building standing. And I used to work for Housing Authority, doing a summer job. So one of the guys was still out there hanging around.
Dorsey.
Yeah, he's like, come inside. I got something for you. And it was this blueprint of the original projects that was still in the window. He's like, Paul, you want this? Like, yeah, I'll take it. And that became the blueprint. And nice. That's what you see right there at the front of the book, the original blueprint of Aliso Village. Yeah.
So, wow. So you're going to write a part two or what?
Yeah, I got it. Well, you know, I just adapted into a screenplay.
Oh, wow, that's good.
Yeah, I just adapted into a screenplay, and right now I'm writing a stage play called Pacel Rio, which is more, you know, I want more interactive and more, you know, so it's like, you know, Pacel Rio just is about a street in the projects from first to fourth, where you got just all these different characters. Like you said, it's like one day you got all these characters. You know, you got the white priest, you got Chaka, you got just so many characters.
Chaka.
Yeah, Paul Gonzalez. Yeah, you got so many characters that was in this area that need to come out. You know, so
for everybody out there, Paul Gonzalez, he won the 1984 gold medal for the featherweight in the Olympics.
Right.
And Chaka, of course, you know, he's a famous tiger.
Right.
I tried to get him on a podcast. He didn't ever return my text.
His huevelita used to live right next door to one of my friends. And one day, we were spending the night, and we heard a bang on the door. He was like, man, who's banging at the door at 4:35 in the morning? You know, like, boom, 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 boom. And we finally opened the door, and Paul was all beat up. And he said, now your head's down. And he put the gold medal around our necks. You know, he said, man, you could do anything you want to do. So that was like one of the episodes that was part of, like,
Paul Gonzalez was beat up?
Well, he just came from the Olympics. It was fresh.
Yeah, it was banged up.
He was a beat. He just looked a little different.
Yeah.
Came from that Trump. He just looked
a little different. But, you know, like I said, to have that gold medal around your neck and, you know, your neighbor, you know, it's just.
His mom still lived in the hood, huh?
Yeah.
All of them, he's still living in the hood, huh?
I think so, right?
When he won the gold medal, he was still living in the projects, huh?
That's tight.
He was training at the Harlem Bank Gym with Al Stanky.
Mm. Yep.
Al Stankovich.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there was a lot of, people say white people are bad. There was a lot of good-hearted white people that were growing up, huh? Some of them were good.
White folks?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like Lou Hazen.
Lou Hazen.
Coach
Lou. Yeah, Coach Lou.
in the project, there was only one white family, huh? It was a mixed family.
Yeah, it was like them back.
Johnny, right?
Yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
It was weird. Like, and growing up, we never saw them as white. I never saw them as white. We just saw them as a dirty motherfucker that lived over there.
Yeah, and that's the thing about the
we
project.
We never saw colors, huh?
No, in the project, we never...
People never say the fucking stupid Asians or these dumb N-words. Nah. We never talk like that. We say los negros.
I think poor was our color.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We're just all poor. It's like, okay, well, we all poor. So, you know, it's like, well, nobody was like, you poorer than me, or you blacker than me, or you Mexican, or you white. Like, everybody was just poor. Everybody was just poor.
Yeah, man. It was cool before lunch tickets came around. Like, now everybody knows we're poor.
Right. Yeah,
I thought lunch tickets were the hookups.
I thought so also, man. You know, once I got a party view, I was trying to hide my lunch ticket. Like, oh man, they know I'm poor. I can't count to no girls, man. They know I'm poor.
Man, I used to be a Harlem back, and I used to split my ticket in half and then put my old and make two stickers, bro. And I could have two lunches. I was slanging lunch tickets, bro.
Man, I had a hustle. Yeah, you had to figure out a way to get two lunches back then, because that's just like one little burrito and some carrot sticks and some apple juice.
Carrot sticks.
Yeah, some carrot sticks, some apple juice, man. Like, man, I need like two of those.
I was telling Rodrigo in the last episode, there used to be a guy walking around the hood going, pizzas!
Yo.
Remember Pizza Loca used to go door to door?
How about Pico de Gago?
Pico de Gago. Yeah, remember when he said Trader Joe's would show up in a truck?
Yeah, Trader
and
Joe's.
Sell fruit?
Hey.
There used to be a man, and he used to ring, he used to hit a fucking, he had like the rim of a tire hanging on the truck. The rim of a tire, like where the tire goes, right? And he'll go ding 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 ding, Pico de Gallo, Pico de Gallo, and he'll sell fruit cocktails with tajin,
right?
And but he didn't just sell it like that. You got to bring your own bowl.
Yeah, right. It was in the trunk of his car, man. Just a whole spread, man. You know, what I'm saying he was like it looked like Hawaii. Like the car was raggedy. The back of the truck, it looked like some tropical Hawaii place or something like that. He was sponsored by Mott's. He had everything.
Got the Mott's.
He was sponsored by Mott's, man. He had everything, man. Mango, water. He had, man.
Jicama.
Come on, man.
Fruit cup.
Oh, man. That was. Fool.
Pico de Gallo.
He'll come late at night also, like 9 o'clock. And he'll park. I'm on the third floor. I was just hearing, like, Mama, the people. He's like, I don't got no food stamps today. I'm like, man, come give me some quarters or something.
Yeah, he was selling fruit cocktail like crack.
Right.
How much you have? A dollar? Right. I'll give you a dollar worth.
Yeah. That's how I used to do it. Like, yeah, 50 cent worth, 20 cent worth, you know.
this is fucked up to say, but my brother, Fernando, he jacked the Pico de Gallo, man.
What?
For what?
When it was in the big-ass cup and ran away?
Oh, fool. When he was trying to take off, my brother tried to grab all the pico de gallo and steal it when the truck was moving. That shit spilled on him.
What happened, fool?
He was so pico de gallo. His eyes were burning, bro.
It was fructose.
He was fructose intolerant.
You don't jack him, man. That's one thing. You don't say that's one
thing. Jack him, bro. You try to check the pico de gallo, and right, take the whole pot with you and leave him. And that his truck was raggedy, bro. All that shit fell.
Fucking speedboat.
And after that, he never came to that side of the hood.
Oh, for hell no. Man, you lost your privileges.
Yeah, that's it. I don't want to sell it for you. That's
There used to be a pico de gallo, man. And there used to be a guy that used to pull up on the side and sell ceviche. And it was good, bro.
Yeah.
It was good.
Man, they had the best foods, man. They, you know, man.
It's all passion at that point.
Yeah,
shit.
You can't, you know, like, being from Boyer Heights, man, like, and living over in Hancock Park, it's like, man, I need my Mexican food. And it's like, man, it's
Elotes.
Elotes.
I remember the comedian, man. Mm. He used to have this funny joke. Huh. I think it was, I don't know, we're in a memory. He just said, man, Mexicans trying to kill brothers now. Putting bacon on hot dogs, putting mayonnaise on corn.
Uh-huh.
They know what we love.
Yeah, that elote, you know. Yeah, I was trying to make one of those for my white girl. She's like, man, what is this?
It's an elote. I got my wife right there, man. Her son loves the corn with the mayonnaise.
But the mayonnaise, okay.
And the mayonnaise on it.
With mayonnaise.
Elotes. Pico de gallo. Big mama, may I? So where can people purchase this book so they can read it?
Oh, man, that's all on Amazon. You
know, Amazon.
Yeah, man. Project Theory, Amazon.
We're going to add a link so you guys can read about Paul Hunt's book.
Mm-hmm.
The Project Theory by Paul Hunt.
Mm-hmm. Through the Amazon window.
Anybody buy this show off our Amazon window.
Mm.
And any projects you come? Do you do speeches?
Man, you know what?
Do a testimonials?
No, well, we building the curriculum off Project Theory. You know, so that's what we're working on right now. So it'll be like the main, you know, get into these schools and influence these kids and, you know, give them more drive and belief. So, you know, that's what we're going to do with Project Theory, create a curriculum out of it.
What's up, fool? You got any question, Rodrigo?
I want to taste fucking Koala's nachos, dog.
Some good nachos, bro.
Damn, dog.
We need to bring that back, man. We need to bring those type of, you know what I'm saying, just going to a house and, you know, you got the trucks down, like going to a house and that's where you get your food.
Man, time were bad for some family that, like, out of the sudden, like, one family will start having a barbecue, and then next thing you know, she's selling tacos. This guy in front of my house had a taco. He was making tacos out of his porch.
Hmm.
And I opened my door, and I go, wait, Mom, you know they're selling tacos now. And I go buy one, and my mom like, fuck, they can buy a taco from that bitch. Like, we didn't even ever buy a taco from her, my mom didn't like her.
So. Wash your hands on.
I'll take some nachos, though. But, and also, before we go, like, another hustle that we had in the projects, and if you want to make honest money, this is before crackheads took over the job. Mm. People like Paul Hunt and I, we used to go to the gas station and just pump people's gas for a buck.
Tips?
Yeah, ballers!
You mentioned they used to make a lot of money doing that. You know, way before what they doing
I think
now.
I saw you one time, bro. You took it to the next level. I saw you at the Arco on 4th Street.
That's the Arco, old school, Soto.
The one on Soto.
Yeah.
I remember seeing you there.
Yeah, I used to,
I used to fuck with First and Boyle.
Yeah, after school. Oh, that was your spot.
And I used to go to the Shell across the street from Harlem back.
Okay.
And right there, because I'm in friends with a guy,
right?
And then I will talk to him, and he'll let me just.
Yeah, I tried those before, but like I think Arco was a hot one. I think the Arco on 4th, that where the most money was at.
Yeah, it was because busy.
You had big trucks, and you know, so I made a lot of money.
Honest, we just go, hey man, can I pump your gas? Can I pump your gas? That's it. And they say no. Oh no.
Right.
Just go. But sometimes people were nice. Like I had customers too.
Yeah.
They will show up.
Right. Right.
That's funny. That customer, but I'm not styling shit.
Mm-hmm.
I had people because he. I used to be on 1st and Boyle, which was a prime spot. And he was on 4th and Soto.
4th and Soto, that was it.
And that's a prime spot because people will buy gas there and then drive down and go on the freeway off the 5.
Right.
Uh-huh. But that one had a line, bro.
Yeah, that was good customers.
And then I'll be on 1st and Boyle, can I pump your gas? Right. And a nice lady will be like, sure. Mm-hmm. How much are you going to put in? $5. So I'll put $5. And then she'll go pay. Or sometimes when they knew me... $10. Right. Okay, no, I'll go pay for you. And I'll stand in line. Here, she wants $10 on seven. Then I'll pump it. Sometimes I'll go in, man, can I check your oil?
Right, yeah.
Or.
Kid Jiffy.
But after a while, man, that spot blew up. There's too many motherfuckers right there. Yeah. Motherfuckers start showing up with squeegee bottles now. Yeah. Can I clean your windows?
Yeah, it got professional real quick.
The market got saturated.
It got professional real quick. I just had a dirty rag, man. It was cool. Nobody knew about it. You know, I was the first person, you know, on the deck. And
then my brother got hooked on crack, and then first to boil became the gas station for only crackheads.
Man, they messed
ruined
up.
The spot, huh?
Ruined the spot, man. They blew the spot up.
Because it was before it was kids like Paul
right,
and me
right, right.
just pumping gas, right. smelling like gas.
Right.
But man, we could walk down with $10 sometimes.
Oh, yeah. That was enough.
Enough. Was I would enough. Make my 10 and yeah. leave.
Yeah, that was good money back then. $10.
Some fool would stay there all day trying to get those Jordans.
Ooh, trying to get those J's on his feet.
Hey, man, but that helped out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you would buy the stuff that your mom wouldn't buy, like a hamburger.
Right. And then, like I said, it was the money came quick. You know, 2 hours. You know, 2 hours. You know, you make some good change. You know, and that was good.
And everybody would give you a dollar.
Everybody give you at least a dollar.
I never got 50 cents. Right. Imagine, bro, 100 people show up. Right. Everybody gives you a dollar. Right. Shit, man.
They said some people said no, but yeah, yes. You, a lot of people say, you know, it was a lot of yeses out there. So,
but now there
was some good people out there.
But now it's just crackheads begging.
Yeah, it was just people begging. You know, it's just like, oh, I know you begging, so I'm not going to give you nothing.
Then you start seeing crackheads hanging out outside Jack in the Box. Yeah, I'll take that order for you. He wants a Jack in the Box.
Right. But, you know, once it got too dangerous, I couldn't even be at the gas station no more and make no money. You know, so.
It got dangerous.
It got real dangerous.
Yeah, man. What's up, fool? Paul Hunt yes, in sir. The house.
Hell yeah, man.
Buy his book. Check out Rodrigo Torres.
Yes.
March 17th.
Oh, no, it'll be done before that, huh? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. This Friday?
Yeah. No, this Thursday. Yeah. It's okay. Thursday. It's all good.
Well, don't check it out.
But hell yeah. Get
Paul Hunt's book, The Project Theory, and buy it, people. How much is it?
You know what?
$20.
When'd you put it out? When'd you release it?
Man, that was last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
$9.99?
Is it?
Do you sign them all?
I could put my name on it.
Well, I read it, man.
Yeah.
Because this is the little boy I remember. That's the last time I saw you.
Man, that was last time. Oh, okay.
Last time I saw you, you looked like this kid.
Man.
Because I remember when you used to walk with your moms and your pops, you got a tight ass family.
Yeah.
And I said, that's a good
family. That Louisiana family.
Yeah, tight.
Yeah.
And you could just tell when I saw you that this guy is not from this hood. He's polite.
Yeah. Big Mama raised me.
Big Mama. Hey. May I?
Yeah, yes, sir.
That's good, man. We talk about a lot of characters on this podcast. Dogman Jackson,
yep.
Big Mama.
I'm Big Mama. Yep.
The Patios.
The Candy Lady.
Yep. Pico de Gallo.
Your brother taking, a lot of characters.
Man. What's up, fool? Thank you very much, Paul, for doing our podcast
show.
Thank you. Man, you brought up a lot of memories, man. Could I give you a hug at the end of the show?
Yes, sir.
What's up, fool?
What's up?
What? Yes. Anything to add? Want to tell anybody?
Man.
We got a couple of listeners from the hood, from the projects that don't live in the projects no more, like Raul Vasquez.
Hmm.
What's up, Raul?
What's up, Raul?
Fake Rocker. We should call your brother Fake Rocker. I'm just kidding,
what's
Raul.
What's up, Red Face?
Oh, fuck that fool. He listens to this shit.
Taboo, what up?
Taboo!
What up?
He knows Taboo, too. Carlos Vasquez. That's the dude that owed me $5, bro.
Oh, yeah. He owed me 16.
What's up, fool? Yeah. Thank you very much. Photo time.
Yeah, man.